and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, conversation with Tim Keeler, music director for the vocal ensemble Chanticleer. Chanticleer has a few performances in the region quite soon, more a bit later in the program. First, Tim, a bit about Chanticleer, as well as you. I understand that you're the fourth of six music directors who are part of this ensemble.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so a little bit about Chanticleer. Chanticleer is, you know, a full-time professional choir, but it's unconducted. Nobody stands up on stage and conducts the group when they perform. So the music director, which is my role, is in charge of, you know, picking repertoire and rehearsing the group. And I often go on tour with the group, particularly when we have education events or community events, and I'm there and I help out with those. But yeah, that's correct. I'm the music director, and I started in 2020. And I'm also a singer. I actually sang with the group for a year before that. And I still do when the timing is right, or if somebody gets sick, or if it's a program that I'm particularly excited about, I'll sing with the ensemble as well, because that's my background, is as a singer, a countertenor.
Nice. Before coming out to the San Francisco area, or specifically, a lot of your background had you in New York, New Jersey, Maryland. Where did you study initially?
Yeah, that's correct. I did my undergrad at Princeton University in music, but not really vocal performance. I thought that I would do maybe even something like computer science after undergrad. Mm. But I actually ended up going to study music, and science was the program I was in when I went to England and sang at Cambridge University. And that's where I started really singing as a countertenor in my falsetto register. And that's where my career as a singer really started. And so after my time in England, I came back to the U.S. and had a career as a freelance singer based in New York City for a few years before I got the call from Chanticleer to come out and join them.
So up until and even when you were in England, you were actually studying computer science and singing. That was just a passion. That was something that you did on the side, for lack of a better way of saying it. Your studies, your proper studies, were elsewhere.
Sort of that. I mean, my undergrad degree was in music, and my master's degree was literally called Music and Science. So It was, you know, it's a sort of a combination of the two in that program.
Nice.
But yes, I mean, music and singing was always been a big part of my life, but I wasn't sure that I was going to make a career out of it until sort of later in life, I suppose.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, you mentioned you got a call to join Chanticleer. There are several things there. One, were you just filling the previous countertenor spot when he left, or maybe when his voice dropped? And also, I guess, is there an audition process where they knew what you could do and called you to be in it?
It's a great question. So actually, I auditioned for Chanticleer about 3 years before I got that phone call. Chanticleer holds auditions every year, and we hear people from all over the country, all over the world, actually. And regardless of whether there's an opening or not, it's a great way to, you know, hear who else is out there in the world who enjoys doing what we do and who is interested in doing what we do. And I came out just out of my master's degree to audition for Chanticleer, knowing that they didn't have an opening for my voice type. But it was such a great opportunity for me to meet everybody in Chanticleer and to also meet all the other people that were auditioning that year are still some of my closest friends. Then 3 years later, when there was an opening, they had me on some list and gave me a call.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Tim, I have a very strong and long history in theater, and so with whether it's straight play or a musical, there are different types of auditions. There's the one-on-one, you're going in with the director and maybe the sour stage manager, perhaps, but then there's also the major cattle call.
First round of auditions is digital submission. We get many, many people submitting tapes online, videos of themselves singing. And from that long list, we whittle it down and invite a handful of people, usually somewhere between 8 and 12 singers, to come out to San Francisco, which is where we're based, for a whole weekend. And that is not just an audition with me, music director, but it's an audition with everybody in the ensemble in Chanticleer, because what we do is so dependent on not only how your voice fits in with everybody else in the group, but how your personality fits in with everybody else in the group, if we're going to get along, because we travel all over the world. We're on the road maybe 6 months out of the year. And so it's really, you know, getting to know these people and getting the ensemble to know everybody is a big part of the audition process. And so that's why we spent a whole weekend singing together. The auditionees sing like a solo repertoire for us, but then we also have a long rehearsal together where we sight read a bunch of music together and sing together and get to know each other.
That is really, really cool. I've been a part of and have known of other instances in the world of theater where some of the first, quote, rehearsals were really hanging out and having a bit of wine and playing Monopoly and just getting to know each other so that these people that were supposed to be on stage close to one another actually developed a bit of a closeness, you know, other than that thing that you develop after 2 months of rehearsals and then there's the performance, then it's over.
So, yeah, absolutely. It's so important.
And it's really cool.
I talk a lot about trust and vulnerability as every performer does, and it's so crucial to be able to trust and be able to be yourself around your colleagues on your offstage, putting yourself out there in front of the world.
Most certainly, most certainly. Something you mentioned, and it surprised me because I don't know enough about it, and that is you said you started singing countertenor. You were already in college at this point, and I would have thought that as a countertenor, this would have to be something that you would have to start shaping before a boy's voice changes during puberty. I thought that this was such a developed and trained early on thing.
Yeah, so, you know, there's so many different ways to think about the countertenor voice, and so many people come to it in different ways, but you know, just as like a little sort of primer for maybe somebody who doesn't exactly know what we're talking about.
Yes, please.
Countertenor is someone who sings in their falsetto register. So like I'm talking to you right now in what I would call like a modal voice or maybe my chest voice, but I could also talk to you up here. And that's my falsetto register. And as it happens, you know, every man has a falsetto register.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to train it and work at it. And some people have more facility with it than others. And to your point, you're absolutely right. If you work in that register earlier on, it can be much easier to continue in that register. So I started singing when I was really small as a boy soprano.
Mm.
And so definitely having access to that sound and that placement certainly helped. Once my voice changed, I was able to recreate some sort of that sensation as a countertenor. But, you know, the voice changes so dramatic sometimes. I really didn't have access to that sort of sound again for many years after my voice changed. And it was after college that I really started to come back and I started to develop it again. You know, there are many countertenors who study countertenor in college because they know they have that voice. I want to do this. But I think there are equally as many countertenors who study another voice part or something else entirely. We have a singer in our group, Adam Ward. His degrees are in French horn performance, but he also is a countertenor just because he was always able to do that and kept singing like that in choir and then made it into his career. So there are many paths to it. And just as, you know, you can have many different kinds of soprano, like a coloratura soprano, there are many different kinds of countertenors as well. And one thing I love about Chanticleer is there are 6 countertenors in the ensemble, all with very, very different abilities, and the combination of all those voice parts is, I think, pretty exciting.
I know that as a countertenor, I mean, we tend to think of them singing much higher, and of course, all things relative, they do, but I was surprised to read very recently that countertenors often overlap with the altos. It's not necessarily way up into the soprano range. So with these 6 countertenors, do you have some singing more in the soprano range, some in the alto, some maybe even dipping down into the tenor?
Yeah, you're spot on. That's exactly right. So the way Chanticleer is set up is with 12 singers. So we have 3 basses, 3 tenors, and 6 countertenors. And those countertenors do split the soprano and alto parts. And, you know, as I said, there are many different kinds of countertenors, and some of those voice parts sit lower in, really, in the alto register. And some of them sit much higher, really, in that soprano register. Some of them are right in between. And so we always are playing a mix and match between pieces and covering those soprano and alto parts.
This is really, some people first hearing about this, the fact that these can be combined like that. So often you hear a voice like this come through as a soloist or as a solo moment within a larger ensemble, perhaps. But this is more akin to, in bluegrass, 4-square harmony, or in jazz or a vocal doo-wop, first tenor, second tenor, etc. kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's really cool.
Absolutely.
Tim, before moving more on to Chanticleer itself, a little bit more on that, you did mention something, and this is a term that we encounter, oh, maybe I do more than other people just because of my special sort of geekiness, but hearing, oh, vocal coaches examining the range of heavy metal versus, say, Broadway, whatever, and you'll hear, this is a term that you whipped out a little bit ago, I'm wondering if you can articulate for people, maybe even with a demonstration. I mean, I heard you do it a little while, ago between, you know, the difference between chest voice versus head voice or tone, chest tone perhaps, and then whether that's singing in the diaphragm or the throat or, again, this head tone. That is a little bit more, on a chest voice, I can imagine quite literally, and a diaphragm, of course, that's down another area. But head voice, that seems almost something like you would keep in your mind's eye to achieve something less physical.
Yeah, it's what is so fascinating and sometimes frustrating about the human voice is that you can't see what's going on, right? And so a lot of times when we talk about singing, we're using metaphors, or we're saying, you know, it's your chest voice or it's your head voice, and we're not being like super specific about, you know, physiologically what exactly is going on there. Even the term falsetto, honestly, has many different interpretations.
Sure.
But generally, when we talk about head voice as opposed to something like chest voice, it's really sort of where it feels in your body, you know, where that resonance feels. Maybe your vocal folds are doing something exactly the same. It's just like where you've chosen to resonate that sound, or the way that you change the shape in the back of your throat or something like that, or where it feels specifically in your head. But when we talk about head voice, you know, usually we're saying we're not yelling. It's something that is not felt in the throat. It's something that really feels a little more relaxed and a little higher and a little more resonating in your head, which can often produce like a lighter sound or a higher sound that is often more sustainable than if you try to produce that same range in your quote-unquote chest voice.
It sounds like you were almost describing what some would refer to as full voice, and that can be in metal. That's that type of full voice. It's that type of projection. But you're talking about that type of projection, but much more of an openness within the folds, it seems.
Yeah, and you can have that sort of projection throughout your range. It's just where that sound chooses to resonate in your body, whether it's resonating in your head or whether it's resonating in your chest, and the muscles that you use to create it, all while trying to achieve some sort of projection, because that is so crucial to what we do. You know, Chanticleer is an a cappella ensemble that performs without amplification, singing early music, Renaissance music, classical music, but also like vocal jazz and pop and spirituals. And so projection, that sort of resonance, is super important to what we do.
I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Tim Keeler, music director for Chanticleer, with several performances in the region in the very near future. Tim, I'm enjoying learning about the group as well as speaking about being a countertenor. And having spoken to you for a while now, I just kind of have to ask, at a party or some social gathering, can you just whip out a baritone or bass voice just for shock value, just to surprise everybody?
You know, I work with a lot of choirs, and I often demonstrate in various ranges, singing the soprano line or the alto line or the tenor line, but there's one thing I definitely can't do, and I definitely cannot sing bass.
Although I suppose whipping out a countertenor voice would be more of a surprise in a given room, but anyway, a lot of people don't expect that. Well, okay, so background on Chanticleer. Starting with the name, because the only other time, and this screams out certain levels of geekiness again for me, the only other time I've encountered this as a name would be from the Canterbury Tales, this singing
rooster. That's
exactly
rooster.
Right. Yeah, this is the origin for the group Chanticleer. Okay, well, now the lesson behind this tale was pride and avoiding it. And in this case, though, we are indeed taking pride in our voices and song. By chance, any of the history or lore out there somewhere which has some guys at a meeting room, somebody saying, yeah, let's go with Chaucer, of course. Or maybe this discussion came from a cocktail bar.
Yeah, exactly. A cocktail bar. Precisely. This is actually the Chanticleer lore is that, you know, this is a group was started in 1978. Our founder named Louis Botto. He was singing in the San Francisco Symphony Chorus and also singing up at Grace Cathedral, the Episcopal Cathedral in San Francisco, at the Choir of Men and Boys there, and got a few of his friends together and sat around the dining room table one night after a dinner and started singing some Renaissance motets together. And they decided, you know, actually, this sounds pretty good. Let's put on a concert. And where precisely the name Chanticleer came from, I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, Chanticleer is that clear singing rooster.
Yeah.
And that's something that sort of clarity of sound is something we still strive to aim for today.
Man, the origin of Chanticleer as a group, it sounds like any Find New Alpha party or something like that. Wow. There's 12 people in the group currently. I'm wondering what sort of changes has the group seen over the years, whether it's more people these days, maybe looking at more contemporary or experimental pieces, perhaps something going on today that we didn't see in the past or maybe wouldn't have dare seen in the past with vocal purists.
Sure. So when the group started out around that dining room table, it was pretty much an early music ensemble, pretty much singing exclusively Renaissance motets or madrigals, maybe the occasional piece outside of that. But that's really where it started, and that's also one of the reasons that countertenors are such a crucial part of the sound, because that's how that music would have been sung back in the 1600s, is with countertenors. And then after that, gradually as things started to build up, we started to add more and more various kinds of repertoire, really, and the music director who really sort of brought us into the next realm was a music director who joined the group in 1983. His name is Joseph Jennings, and he brought in his tradition of this black gospel singing style and arranging style and compositional style, and brought in so much more repertoire to the group that is now such an integral part of what we do and what we still do. Then on top of that, the group started to commission new works. As the group gained more notoriety, we had more ability to work with contemporary composers. So every year we commission new works for the choral canon, whether that be compositions or new arrangements written specifically for us. It's one of the things I love most about Chanticleer is every year it's something new. Yes, we're going to sing the standards and we're going to sing the Renaissance motets, but we're also going to sing brand new pieces of music and brand new arrangements that highlight all these new sounds that we're experimenting with, or these new texts, or these new composers that have so much to share with the world.
Phenomenal. Wow. I mentioned earlier performances coming up in this region, and reminder, May 10th, 11th, and 12th, that's respectively Santa Monica, La Jolla, and the closest, I believe, would be Palm Desert on the 12th at St. Margaret's. Have you, Tim, with or without Chanticleer, performed at St. Margaret's before?
Yes, in fact, I have been there myself singing, I think it was 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
I would just have to presume that with the place being known for such an incredible pipe organ, it would just have to be acoustically unique, or at least designed for maximum acoustic presentation. Is there something that you find in this space that you don't find in others? And I'm not this isn't your chance to knock the Presbyterian church down the corner because they don't have the same acoustics. But what do you find at St. Margaret's that's so special about that place?
Certainly the acoustics are spectacular, and you're right, you know, when you have an instrument like that, the building is designed around that, and organs and choirs go hand in hand. We're not going to use the organ in our concert, but a lot of great acoustics for organs are often very good for choirs. It's always a thrill to go to a place like St. Margaret's and perform in an acoustic that is literally built for an a cappella acoustic chamber choir like Chanticleer. And of course, the surrounding area is beautiful as well, and it's really hard to think of a more beautiful area than that sort of Southern California high desert. It's really pretty fun to go out there.
Oh, truly. Can you speak of the lineup? And please don't tell me this is a spoiler, but rather an enticement for people to come out.
Yeah, you mean the program that we'll be sharing.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, absolutely. The program that we're singing is called Without a Song. This is our touring program this year where we explore the power of music and its ability to transform us, maybe inspire us, maybe frustrate us sometimes. And through that journey, really breaking down music into its building blocks. So I mentioned that Chanticleer started as an early music ensemble. So one of the pieces that we're singing is a piece from the Middle Ages. It's a movement from a mass by Guillaume de Machaut, written in the 1300s. Immediately, as soon as it starts, you're transported back in time. And what I find particularly interesting in the context of this program is how a piece like that has these same structural building blocks that you can trace throughout the course of Western music history. And you can see how these same structural either chords or modes of structuring a composition repeat themselves over time. So that piece is sort of an anchor piece for us. But we start out with a couple pieces that sort of challenge what maybe a song should be at all, including a piece by a contemporary composer named Toby Twining. And this piece is called He Umha, and it has it has no words. And our soloist, Andy Van Allsburg, in this piece showcases his yodeling style at the top of the show. when we sing it for students, I always ask them to think, you know, what is this piece about? And I'm not sure I have exactly the answer, but I think it's a thrilling way to start a program that is sort of about music, because you're like, what is this? Is this even a song? It's a thrilling piece of music, but it doesn't conform to any sort of styles that we might be already familiar with. So something like that, and then we have this early music to show where all these things came from. And in addition to all of that, we have new commissions that were written specifically for Chanticleer. We have a piece written for us this year by a composer named Ayanna Woods. It's called Future Ones. And in this piece, she quotes the climate activist Joanna Macy, who lives in the Bay Area. And in this piece, she encourages us to think about the future and think about how our lives will impact those to come. You know, one of the ways that I think music is so important and art is so important is capturing the current sentiments in the world and what people are going through, and finding ways to let that all out through art, and in our case, through the art form of singing. The program, like I said, is called Without a Song, and so the final piece in the program is indeed a new arrangement for us, brand new this year, by Stacey B. Gibbs of the jazz standard Without a Song, which is a lovely way to send people off, I think, because music makes everybody's life better.
Oh my gosh, indeed. Yes, yes. And I'm so glad that you circled back around to the actual song, and not that this was some metaphoric kind of imagine a world where, you know, some, you know, dystopian future kind of thing. Whatever. Okay, wow, nice. And there are a lot more dates, by the way. I've mentioned three. There are a lot more dates coming up between the tour and the regular season in the San Francisco and Sacramento area. And there's more at chanticleer.org, simply enough. Is there, by the way, a difference between the touring ensemble and the, well, I just referred to it, I suppose, as the regular season? Is there any difference there?
Yeah, so when we're on the road, we have a couple touring programs that we take on the road that are showcase sort of everything that we do. Mm. So we have our early music, we have our new music, we have our vocal jazz and our spirituals and everything in between. But we also, when we're in the Bay Area, we have our own home season. And there we get to experiment a little bit. And I'm glad you asked about this, because it's another thing that I love about Chanticleer. So we just put on a series of concerts in the Bay Area of a brand new program for us, curated by our tenor, Vinil Garissa Hall. And it was all Indian music. Mm. Indian classical music, Hindustani and Carnatic, but also some Indian pop music and even a couple Bollywood numbers in there as well. And it was such a great opportunity for all of us in the ensemble to explore vocal styles that we're not quite as familiar with, and for Vinil to have the opportunity to explore this genre of music and work with all of us and get a lot of his arrangements and his compositions out there as part of this program. So we like to experiment when we're in the Bay Area, and then oftentimes the following touring program, the next season, will have elements from those specific Bay Area concerts interspersed throughout the touring program.
That's really exciting. Did I read of a new CD either coming out soon or maybe has just come out sometime in the relative recent past?
Yeah, we just released an album this year of music that we toured last season, and it is music that features the song cycle The Rivers Are Our Brothers by the composer Majel Connery. And this is just out this year. We're really excited about it. She's written some beautiful music and arranged it for Chanticleer in a really special way. This album, all these songs, ask the listener to interact with the natural world as if they were part of your family. For example, there's a movement called I Am a Mountain, and the mountain speaks to us through this song and talks about all of its characteristics and all of its desires and wishes. And there's also I Am Snow, and I Am a River, and I Am a Cloud. Majel Connery wrote all the music for them. She also wrote all the lyrics to them, which are simultaneously simple but also have a lot of depth to them as well. And music like that, I think, is really special, that has one level that is immediately gratifying, and then as soon as you look beneath the surface, you realize that there is so much more going on. So this is an album that I absolutely adore, and we've had great response to it when we take these programs on the road. And so I'm really excited that it's now out there. It's also up on Spotify or any streaming services that anybody wants to check out.
Oh, phenomenal. This is one that if people want an introduction to the group or just something that can have this dual purpose of just satisfying the need for something tonally pleasing, if I can just break it down to base level there, but then also driving you further into the academic levels of a song. That's incredible, Tim. That's truly incredible. Something that you mentioned when you were talking about the performance It seems like this is not just a collection of songs, but rather I would guess or hope that someone would be coming in with a bit of history, a little bit of, you know, interspersed between the songs. Okay, this came out late 14th century. They're really talking about this, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and so we always speak from the stage and the ensemble members will talk between sets and introduce the music and give some either personal anecdotes or some history to help the listener along, because it can be a lot if you're not exactly sure what you're listening to try to parse it all out. So it always helps to have somebody maybe hold your hand just a little bit from the stage. And it also helps to get some of that personality from the singers, because they're all brilliant communicators themselves. And so it's nice to get a little bit of their personality from the stage as well when they speak.
Well, without a doubt. And when someone is speaking about something of which they have a passion, that passion leaks through and it comes through, and that helps the audience just get ready to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
To wrap, Tim, I mentioned earlier chanticleer.org, and so that's chanticleer, chanticleer.org. How about other social media, be it Facebook or Instagram?
We're pretty much everywhere we can be. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram at ChanticleerSF. We're also on TikTok for those of you who want to follow us there. And we are pretty consistent with posting snippets of either concert clips or even just random little arrangements of songs we like that we put up there from time to time.
And on TikTok, so is it also ChanticleerSF?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, SF, like San Francisco. Okay, wonderful.
Exactly.
Okay, Tim, I appreciate your time on this. Again, I had a great time with this. This is fun. This is, again, just like hanging out at a party. I'd be like, well, how did you get that name? That and Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Those are different names. Okay,
yeah.
So thank you, and break a leg on your performance this evening and the rest of the tour. And I hope to be able to make it out for one of these performances, specifically Palm Desert. But if I don't, I really hope to catch you guys soon. And this has awakened, I think, something for other people listening too, I hope.
Well, thank you so much for chatting, David. I really appreciate it and hope to run into you soon.
For this edition of KVC Arts, it's been Conversation with Tim Keeler, Music Director for Chanticleer. More on Chanticleer, CDs and performances, and more at chanticleer.org. That's C-H-A-N-T-I-C-L-E-E-R, chanticleer.org. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Tim Keeler, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Sharina Wad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time of the year, day or night, at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.